own welcome. It's a parent's worst nightmare, finding out your child is COVID positive. How does a family cope when a child has to be admitted to pediatric ICU and they can only see them via video calls? How do you hold down your one-year-old toddler for a nasal swab when you know that you couldn't take the test yourself without flinching? As India grapples with the second wave of the coronavirus pandemic with a record surge in daily cases and deaths, more and more parents find themselves confronted with this terrifying and heartbreaking challenge. When the pandemic began last year, children were relatively less affected by the virus than adults. That's what we were told, and the bigger worry used to be that they might be asymptomatic carriers who could infect older family members like grandparents while remaining fine themselves. But now virologists have sounded the alarm over the impact of a possible third wave on children in India. What are they basing this on? Is there an increase in infections in India in children in the second wave? And does the COVID third wave pose a bigger threat to children since they're not vaccinated? Let's ask the experts. But first, joining us is Aarti Natarajan Sharma. She's the mother of two kids. Her daughter is six. Her son is three. Aarti, thank you for joining us. Your son was just 2 years old when he got COVID. What happened?
Thank you, Sarah. This was last year, end of May. My son, Arav, he had fever just for a day. And he recovered after that. We had no reason to suspect that it was COVID because he had no other symptoms. And none of us in the house were affected either. 10 days after that, he suddenly complained of a lot of pain and distress in the lower half of his body. We rushed him to emergency. He was admitted to hospital. It was initially diagnosed as something called GB syndrome, which was then, they took back that diagnosis because the MRI showed that there was a massive spinal bleed, which was compressing on his spinal cord, because of which he had lost sensation and movement waist downwards. He couldn't move his legs. He had no sensation at all. We had to have an emergency spinal surgery done, which went off successfully. But subsequent to that, his lungs were compromised and he had to be put on the ventilator for 17 days. We were in the hospital for a total of 36 days, after which we came home. He still can't walk or stand. He's been having intensive physiotherapy almost for a year now. This happened in June last year. And it's a long road still ahead because it's a question of nerves. So no one can really say how long it's going to take or to what extent the recovery will happen. But he's young, so we are hopeful that he shall recover. Tested negative.
Going by his smile over there, it's just so adorable. We hope, he's a really sweet kid. Thank you so much. I can imagine how hard your day is. And you've taken time out to share your story. It really means a lot. And I know as a mother, you feel you're hoping that nobody else, you wish that nobody else would have to go through what you're going through. But I want to ask you, when I hear your story, 36 days in hospital, you all tested negative and you had no exposure to COVID. So nobody in the family else tested positive. And this happened last year when we were all told that only kids are only likely to be super spreaders, not to be affected themselves. So, so much of it seems inexplicable about this virus. So much of it seems confounding. And so much of the focus of the media has been only on the adult-related symptoms. There's not enough knowledge about kids' vulnerability. And from your story, from what I've understood, please correct me if I'm wrong, by the time you start taking action, since so little is known, things can become quite serious.
Yes, they can. He, in fact, tested negative for COVID thrice when he was admitted because the protocol last year was that you could not admit a child until and unless he tests negative for COVID. So he was tested negative thrice. And it was only when one of the doctors around 3 weeks, 3 weeks after he was on the ventilator, one of the doctors in the pediatric ICU asked us to get his antibodies test done. And we had his antibodies test done, and they were extremely, extremely high, which is why when we all got our antibodies test done, and all of us tested positive for antibodies, which means that all of us were, in fact, exposed to COVID. That is how we knew that he had COVID. And his the compromising of his lungs was actually a very high possibility of a fallout from COVID, because there was no reason why after a spine surgery his lungs should be compromised.
Wow. Okay. Let's bring in Dr. V. Ravi. He's the head of the Department of Neurovirology at NIMHANS. He's a member of the International Advisory Board of the Sputnik vaccine. He's an advisor to the COVID-19 Task Force of Karnataka. Doctor, you have been one of the first virologists to sound the alarm. You say children below 18 are at risk of a COVID third wave. Doctor, why? What are you basing this on?
Thank you, Sarah, for having me on the show. A small correction. I retired from NIMHANS 6 months back. What have I based my predictions on? First of all, it is not an alarm. It is information that should be used for planning. SARS-CoV-2 is a new virus to humanity. The only way you can get immunity is to get infected or to get vaccinated. Having said this, in the first wave, 4 to 5% of COVID positives were children. In the second wave, it is anywhere hovering around 10%, but varies from state to state. In some states, it's as high as 20%, which means 80% of children are not exposed, number one. But if you look at sero survey results, 25 to 30% of children have shown antibodies in the national field. That still leaves 70% of children. Right now, we do not have vaccines for children. So they are vulnerable, susceptible population. It is the property of the virus to seek out susceptible people and infect them. That
Sorry,
is the
So, doctor, I just want to, make sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying, given the fact that everybody is getting vaccinated, that is, adults are getting vaccinated, seniors are getting vaccinated first, kids are the only ones who are left without a vaccination, so they are more susceptible. That is why you're expecting more kids to be infected in this phase and the next phase.
Absolutely. And in sheer numbers, they constitute about 30 crores. Roughly in this country. And then, so we have to think ahead, plan ahead and say, do we have enough resources to admit and treat children? If they require serious complications, do we have ICU beds? Are we going to treat children healthy and COVID in the same hospital? I think these are points for discussion. The idea is not to alarm people, but we have another 6 months before we get the third wave. Why not we get ready?
Absolutely. I have Sanvi Shah, a student on the show. She has a question for you. Do we have Sanvi up? Sanvi, could you unmute? What's your question for doctor? Okay. What about Shimoni? Okay. So, doctor, in that case, what does one do? Because you're saying the only solution is a vaccine, but we don't have vaccines for kids. I know that in Canada, they've started with the Pfizer vaccine. The U.S. is supposed to also give permission to go ahead for the Pfizer vaccine for children above the age of 12. But what about us? So what do Indian parents do then?
Okay. The hopefully, in another 4 or 5 months, there will be trial results, at least for 12 and above. And then these trials will start for 2 to 12. I wish that happens very fast. If it happens, but still the challenge remains, how do you cover 30 crore children in a short time? That's number one. Our own Indian Zydus Cadila vaccine, which is undergoing trials, that is the good news, has included people between 12 and 18, and those results will be out by the end of this month or by 15th of June. And if that vaccine is efficacious, it's a DNA vaccine. The only problem with that is it's 3 doses. Even that is welcome. So I think there is hope. But what I am trying to say is we have to get the system ready. Otherwise, we will really face serious problems.
I have Amrita Bedi joining us. Amrita is the mother of three kids. Amrita, your five-year-old, that is your youngest, had serious complications due to COVID. Can you share your story?
Yes. Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having me. Yes, my youngest did indeed have the most serious complications after the lot. The ordeal began when my father-in-law, Sardar Kavaljeet Singh, was the appointed member minority commission. So the government office that he went to, he brought it home from there. 2 days in, he felt sick. And just a few days after, like dominoes, we were all toppling over, one after the other. His complications became so severe that he had to be hospitalized. But my youngest was so far showing no symptoms. But I was isolated from them. So third day in, I find out my youngest is also having slight issues with slight fever and some diarrhea. And so I took him in, I spoke to the pediatrician, and she says, you know what, isolate him with you, because my middle child and my husband didn't get sick. And the moment I isolated him with myself and my oldest son, we stayed there. The first day he was totally fine. There was nothing out of the ordinary. He just had a slight fever, and that's about it, nothing else. So that night when he slept, at about 4 o'clock in the morning, I just checked his pulse, because I would wake up and, you know, put the oximeter on before the kids would wake up, because he'd get uneasy. So the moment I did, the child woke up with all of a sudden in like an attack, you would say, and it was uncontrollable. I've seen a minor version of that when he has like a asthmatic sort of reaction. He doesn't have asthma, no bronchitis or anything. So when he did that, it was something I've never seen. And immediately alarmed, I shouted for my husband to come out, and, you know, we had to rush him to the hospital, because he was so panicked, he couldn't breathe, and he was making the loudest sound I still have in my, etched in my memory. Like, it's so uncanny. I've never heard that sound before. So he wasn't confirmed COVID yet. So what we didn't know what to do then, to take him to the COVID hospital or take him somewhere immediate that would give us some, you know, relief and respite. So we took him to Apollo Cradle. And the moment we reached there, the doctor, even though it was like the middle of the night, he was very lucid and, you know, totally awake. And he said, this is not a COVID hospital, but the child needs immediate help. I'm going to give him an injection. So he gave him an injectable dexamethasone, which he said, this is the immediate relief you can get. And now you have to take him to Bhil Kapoor or any other hospital for that matter. Just take him there. So we rushed from there to the hospital, took him to the emergency room. And the doctor said that he needs to be tested for COVID right now. And then we're going to have to admit him. And then all of this, the process follows right after. The child can't breathe. But the dexamethasone had started working. And I could see like maybe like 2%, 5% of change that he's about to breathe. And he's, you know, he's not having that difficult time breathing now. So we took the call there, and then the doctor said, either you admit him right now, and we can't give him nebulization here, we can't give him steam here, all of that holistic therapy and some anything that spreads aerosols is not going to be done. So we took a call and took him home, even though it was a very difficult decision to make at that time. But we took him home for that matter, and we went home, started nebulization immediately. And then my pediatrician, Dr. Meet from Apollo Cradle, she was a godsend. She was picking up my calls every 2 seconds, even though she was in ICUs and with other children and whatnot. So she said, start him a Omnicortal 4, which was a steroid that he took for 7 days nonstop. But I was later told that he had a stridor attack, which was so severe, if he had not received that injection there and then, he possibly would have asphyxiated and it would have been fatal. So that injection of Dexa saved his life, and then further complications were stopped basically because of that. And he had laryngopharyngitis, which was so severe that his lungs were super compromised, and we were endlessly just nebulizing him every 2 to 2.5 hours. He was on nebulization, so all of that nebulization, and still 26 days he was sick. His fever wouldn't go down. He was constantly red, and his appetite had gone downhill. He lost a ton of weight. I lost weight with him, but I know for a fact what really hit him was the psychosis, the fact that he was sick and he was stuck in a room and then can't go out, he wouldn't go out. And the hospital, I mean, the whole scenario was extremely frightening for him as well as myself. I think the mental stigma that goes along with COVID really does lower your immunity. Whether it's a child or an adult, I think it works havoc on my immune system in whole.
Well, I mean, that's why you are, I mean, today is Mother's Day, and I really want to say you moms are the bravest. You're coming out and speaking about this because your case happened way back in September. So I can imagine it was much harder. Hopefully now, you know, we're realizing this could be the new normal. We need to talk about these things. These are very difficult decisions.
I think what's happened, Sarah, is human tendency is we underestimate things. We've underestimated the virus. We've just behaved in the typical human way. Oh, it's nothing. You know, it'll be fine. It'll be gone in a bit. It's not like that. We as adults, we can't blame the infrastructure. We can't blame the health system. It has got to stop. We need to take some credit of all the, you know, havoc that's taking place because we ourselves have done what we've done. We don't mask up. We don't wash our hands. We don't keep sanitation. We don't, the basic things that are needed. If we don't do those, this third wave is going to happen. And it's going to happen.
How is your son doing now?
We're getting vaccinated. The children are not.
How is your son doing now?
He is now better. He's lost weight, which thankfully, according to the pediatrician, is a good thing. But I can still, the wheezing still is ongoing, and I always keep the nebulization with me. I will forget my phone. I will forget my clothes. I will not forget that nebulizer. It goes everywhere with me. I have a handy one always at the go. And omnicotyl forte, like I said, steroid is always with me for whenever, God forbid, never happens again. Because the sounds that he made that night, I wouldn't wish it upon any mother in the world. My worst enemy, I wouldn't wish it upon. It's just, it was the most harrowing of times. And like I said, my father-in-law, who got sick the first, he didn't make it. He passed away. And he was exceptionally close to the children. And he was messaging me from the ICU, please look after my children. And post that, 4 days past that, he passed away. So, you know, all of that was a...
And how difficult to explain all of this to young kids, to a five-year-old. It just must be heartbreaking. Exactly. I have Dr. Nihar Parekh here, the pediatrician, the director of the CHERS Childcare, joining us. Dr. Parekh, you know, when I hear Amrita's story, when I hear Aarti's story, something that's standing out to me is the fact that these kids started feeling sick, started having these complications days after the first symptom. I mean, it sounds like there was a 10-day break, or there really wasn't. It just seemed very sudden overnight and had no connection to what the symptom was. In Aarti's case, one-day fever.
Correct. Sarah, good evening, guys. And I want to wish a very happy Mother's Day to all the strong mothers out there. Now, the second mutation of the COVID virus has basically, in the second wave, the double mutation is more potent for children. So children are getting the disease. Children are not carriers anymore. Now, luckily for us, we've seen kids from 6 months onwards going up to 13, 14 years and 15 years getting the disease. But 90% of the kids have symptoms of a regular viral, which settle in 3 to 5 days. They recover very well. In adults, it's a biphasic disease where there is an infection. The infection goes away. And then there is the cytokine storm or the cytokine reaction, which is the inflammatory reaction from the 5th or 7th day onwards, where, you know, you see the adults getting the cough in the chest and the pneumonia like picture, and the HRCTs are done and the saturations are dropping. Fortunately, in the second wave, even though children are getting infected, 90% of them just have a single phase like a normal viral. Unfortunately, that very small percentage of children, which, you know, the two mothers gave us a very, very scary, dreadful examples of, is, I think, something called MISC.
Yes.
Which is a multi-systemic inflammatory syndrome in children.
Yeah.
This is an inflammatory response of the body to the COVID virus after the virus has left the body, usually seen after the third week. And this kind of an antibody spike starts attacking every system of the child's body, starting from the
eyes. So, doctor, quickly, I want to understand then, if that's the case, if we cannot have access to a vaccine right now, what should parents do?
So, number one, mask up. I think everyone should keep masking their children. Mask, hygiene, staying indoors is the need of the hour. Keep talking to your pediatrician with 2 to 3 days of fever. Make sure he's there in touch with you. Go see your pediatrician in the 3rd or 4th day. Keep your children indoors. But what I want to warn every parent for that very rare MISC is after the 2nd or 3rd week of recovery, watch for sudden deterioration of your child's health. Your child overnight will become very sick, And that's the time you need to pick him up or her up and rush to the hospital. Fortunately,
Right, doctor,
Sarah,
I have
it's
another.
Still very rare.
You're saying it's still very rare. Unfortunately, we have so many cases tonight. We have also Chandani Sikand, who's a 12-year-old daughter, fought COVID, and she has a similar experience. It sounds nightmarish, but we're repeating it over and over. Chandani, could you share your story?
Yes, Sarah. So, you know, Parisa got COVID, and the day that she tested positive for COVID, she already had symptoms of extreme muscle myalgia, which is extreme pain in the muscles. She could barely move her legs, and slowly she could not move her back, her arms, and there was swelling of the entire body. Her eyes were bloodshot, and she was vomiting whatever she was eating. And the whole experience was very mind-numbing. And the thing was that we had it in our mind that for children, COVID is a very mild experience. In fact, we were quarantined and me and her were alone in one part of the house. And we just kept telling her, no, it's just 1 or 2 days, it's going to pass. And her condition kept deteriorating. And honestly, we never realized that, this was which she was experiencing MISC, because as parents, we had no knowledge about it. And I was on the phone with the pediatrician 5 times that day. And I was telling him the symptoms, this, but I think overall, this nobody did realize that it could be so severe, and it was only late at the night when we talked to another family, a family member who's a doctor, and we sent her pictures of Parisa because she couldn't move by then. Imagine a child, 12-year-old, and she cannot move, and I have to I had her, honestly, we don't have wheelchairs at home, so I had her her desk chair, her study where she sits and studies, which has wheels. I would put her, hold her up, lift her off the bed, put her on that chair, and take her to the washroom, then back. Even if she had to move, a muscle, she would say, Mama, can you move my leg? I cannot move this. Or even getting her up to eat something. And that's when we realized that we had to move to the hospital, and the doctor sounded the alarm. And at night, at 9:30 p.m., we had to find a bed somehow and passed.
Well, Paricha, I don't know if you can, if we can get your audio. I want to ask you, this was very recent. I know your mom tells us the story. It sounds like it was last year where we didn't have enough information, but this was actually as close as April 21st that you were discharged. Paricha, how do you feel?
I'm doing much better now, thanks to my doctors. I'm exercising regularly, and I'm mostly glad to be alive and well at home.
Paricha, you've also, such a brave young lady. You're an inspiration to us all. You started a fundraiser after that to raise money for other kids like you.
I recently started a fundraiser. And I when I got back from the hospital, I had two options. I could either lay helpless on a bed, or I could help out other needy kids. So I chose option number 2, obviously. I wanted to create awareness about MISC and how COVID is actually also affecting kids. So I thought of this one.
Thank you. Thank you. It's wonderful to have you on the show tonight. You're really the highlight of the show for us. Best of luck. Bhavna Laroya is another mom we have joining us. You have two kids, a 5-year-old and a 16-month-old, Bhavna, and you, your whole family got COVID, your in-laws, your husband. My heart breaks hearing your story because kids, but a 16-month-old being a new mother with a newborn and then catching COVID, that just really must have been terrifying.
Hi, Sarah. Yes, it was a nightmare. I was positive. So I suspected that, yes, my kids could wake up with a fever the next morning, or they could show any kind of symptom, because we live in a joint family and we're all on the same floor. So the kids, we're a close-knit family. We're always together. So, yes, and that's what happened the next day after my mother-in-law was tested positive. My 15-month-old woke up warm. And I looked at my husband and I said, I think she has a fever. I'm going to check it. And that's what it was. She had a 99.5 fever. And I knew, suspected it's COVID. I immediately called the pediatrician and I told him that, listen, doc, my baby is just 16 months old. She has 99.5 paracetamol. Is there anything else I need to do? Please tell me the signs I need to watch out for, because she's too small. She can't tell me what's happening with her body. But and I was panicking at the same time. I was trying to keep calm because I was also experiencing some symptoms. And my biggest worry at that point was, if I am positive and if I get major symptoms, how do I take care of my baby? You know, she was still breastfeeding at that time. So she really needed me. And luckily, with God's grace, she had a fever for about 48 hours. It rose up to 102, and then the next morning it came 99. And I watched out for symptoms like cough, diarrhea, vomiting, and luckily she didn't have all of those. Now, what happened, and I want all mothers to listen to this because this happened with her. After 2 days of recovering, the third day, she stopped eating. So, good eater. You know, she eats her meals on time and she eats everything. She stopped eating and she was very cranky and lethargic. And she had no fever. So that really worried me. I called up a pediatrician and I asked him, I said, listen, doctor, she doesn't have a fever. She is lethargic. She wants to sleep all day. It's probably because her body is hurting and she's going through this virus in her body. But, you know, I've heard that these are the signs which are dangerous. So the doctor told me, if she doesn't get better by the evening, I would like you to bring her to Rainbow's Hospital, to the COVID ward. So that's the time when I really panicked and hoped, and I did everything. I kept her hydrated. I did, like, that's all I could do. She was only having milk.
So your takeaway is that it's just because, as all the other parents here are saying, just because the initial symptoms are over doesn't mean you can let your guard down. But Bhavna, Aarti, Amrita, all of you, thank you so much for sharing your stories. You speak for all the parents in India right now. We're tossing and turning at night, wondering how to protect our kids with these new mutant viral strains emerging. That's all we can say is, learn from these stories. It's prudent to follow all protocols related to COVID-19. Take precautions to keep your children safe and sound. Thank you all for joining us. We're going to try and keep the focus on issues like this. What are these pediatric wards going to look like, for example? Can you just leave a child there alone? Many, many questions unanswered. First of all, as Dr. Ravi says, this is the time to prepare. Let's not waste the next 6 months. Thank you all for joining us on We the People tonight.